So good morning, everyone, and it's great to be back here in San Jose after so many years. Today I'll be talking a little bit on some ideas that we have with respect to edge clouds and edge resource sharing at Bell Labs. And actually, the way this talk is structured, it's actually 3-for-1 special because this idea about how to use resources at the edge, this is this is something which has been going a process of successive refinement. So this whole thing started about actually in 2005 when I look at my old mail. We had some corridor discussions on, okay, we have these unused computers, how can we make use of them? And then we had some ideas, but then we've not able to solve them. Okay, so we kind of kept it in storage. And then last year we had some insights which allowed us to solve some of these algorithmic issues. So we did create some prototype, and that's actually what this paper is also about. And then we kind of moved on, and now we started a new project which takes these older ideas and tries to use these ideas to create a distributed virtual cloud. So let me start off at the very beginning, where we had this corridor discussions on how we had these unused computers at home and what exactly could we do with it. And then, so we said, why can't we kind of share them? But when we looked at the sharing models that were prevalent at the time, which is the natural P2P model, that was not the model that we had in mind. The model that we had in mind was, is there some way in which we can have exclusive access to resources which reside elsewhere? That is, I have something to share, you have something to share. Now, can we make exclusive use of each other's resources? And that is the model that really isn't supported by the existing peer-to-peer, some DHT type of sharing, in which the resources are shared across all the users. So our model was more about exclusive sharing. And so the type of applications we were looking at was something like hosting a personal website, or even something like backup, in which you say that, okay, why don't you use my unused computer for backup, and I'll use your unused computer for backup, and so on. So again, like I said, the model that we were working is the model which you can call a direct assignment, in which every single person has got, so you have the notion of offers and requests. So I, for example, I might have some 3 computers, and I can say that, okay, I'm offering 3 unused computers. And in turn, I also want, say, maybe 2 computers that some other person has. So like that, each of us can have an offer, which is something that we're willing to offer, and a request, which is the kind of computers that you want. So now this simple, so really what you want to do is to be able to create some kind of assignment matrix in which, given your request, you kind of say that, okay, I have this 3 requests for 3 computers. Now how can I solve these requests for 3 computers by using them from the other users? And so now the simple problem, I mean, the problem really sounds very simple, but it turns out that we couldn't really solve it, because solving this problem really means creating this kind of assignment matrix in which your request, you kind of can see that, okay, you can get, say, 1 computer from this user, 2 computer from this user, and 1 computer from that user, and so on. So although this sounds simple, in practice, this actually is really a little bit complicated. And you can actually develop a lot of really intricate insights into this problem by just running through some simple examples. So now let's first develop a little bit of terminology. So first of all, given a set of offers and a set of requests, it's not even clear whether the request can be satisfied or not. For example, if everyone's offering 1 computer and everyone wants 2 computers, clearly this is a set of requests which cannot be satisfied. But even if the, so you can see that one of the requirements is that the set of requests be less than the set of offers. But that by itself turns out not to be sufficient. Now, okay, let's just get on to what exactly is the problem statement that we're trying to solve. So first, so we have this set of offers, we have a set of requests, and then what we're interested in is a request assignment matrix, so that each request can be satisfied by using offers which have been presented by others. So now, you can define something called a feasible assignment in which some of the requests are satisfied. But clearly, what you want is to be able to satisfy as many of the requests as possible. So that is what we call a request optimal assignment. Now, even if you satisfy all the requests, that may not be enough to, as much as possible, that may not be enough to satisfy all the requests. Okay, because again, if you take this example of everyone offering one computer and everyone wanting two computers, now you can satisfy some of the requests, but you can't satisfy all of them. So if you could satisfy all of them, you would have a request satisfied assignment. And now, first question that someone would ask is, okay, why is this problem complicated? Why can't you do something simple like, okay, you have a set of offers, so you aggregate them, and then you have this set of requests. So you start feeding them one by one. But this is a little bit different from your traditional bin packing problem, because here, this the kind of the fly in the ointment really is the fact that you're not able to satisfy a request using your own offer. That is, when you have an offer of, say, one computer, and you have a request for one computer. Now, you're not really looking to satisfy your offer with your own request. You want to satisfy your offer with someone else's request. Okay. And if you look at something like a greedy solution, okay, like say, you'll see that that really doesn't work well. Okay, for example, just take this simple example in which you have these three users. So each user, so this user has got one request, this has one request, two requests, and then one offer, one, two. So if you were to do some type of greedy algorithm, you'd see that, okay, I have this request, and since I can't satisfy my one, let me go for the next one. Okay, here, I satisfy this one here. Similarly, this one, you'll see that, okay, here's an offer which I can use to satisfy this request, and this gets satisfied. But you can see that now you're left with this end user whose request you cannot really satisfy, because you cannot satisfy the request with your own offer. Okay. On the other hand, if you had a somewhat more optimal approach, what you would have done is that you would have taken the first user's request, satisfied it with this offer here, and similarly you have satisfied this request with this offer. And now these two requests, you can satisfy these with these individual offers here and here. So as you can see, what we really wanted in terms of resource sharing was this notion of direct assignment, in which you have exclusive access to others' resources. In order to do this direct assignment, you have to solve this what we call this matchmaking problem, in which your requests and offers are kind of matched together. And so we did, and we had this issue of having to solve this n-square matrix in that case. And if you look, you could kind of always put it into some linear programming mode and solve it, putting some constraints. But the problem with linear programming is that you're not really guaranteed of getting integral results, which is what we wanted. I mean, we didn't want something which said that, okay, you take 0.75 of this guy's computer. That really didn't make sense. Okay. So that we kind of got stuck at this algorithmic stage. And again, then we looked at a little bit more into the details of how exactly does one share resources. And when we looked at the target applications we were looking, that is like websites or even like something like a backup. Now, okay, I have this computer, you have your computer, and we agreed to kind of use each other's computers for backups. But then when we looked at building this actual application, the backup application, it wasn't clear which level do we focus on. Do we focus on, say, this at a disk sharing, or are we talking about file sharing, and then we use some one particular. So the problem is that when you talk about applications, it's a huge space, and if you satisfy one point, you're not satisfying the full space. So it kind of became clear to us that when you talk about resource sharing, then you really shouldn't be talking at the application level. You build a resource sharing infrastructure, and you give this framework, and then let people build applications on top of it. So this is, I mean, so these were the initial qualitative discussions we had. That was, like I said, 7 years ago. And we couldn't quite, at the time, figure out what to proceed, how to proceed. But then last year, what happened was that we did get this insight that, OK, if you look at this matchmaking problem, now, okay, the linear programming approach, that really isn't good for getting this integral solution that you want. But you could actually cast this matchmaking problem into a max flow problem. And so that gives lots of nice properties. So let me talk about the reduction. So again, getting back to the problem. The problem is that each of us has got some requests. Okay, let's call abstract resources. In our case, this is going to be computers. But this problem is very abstract. So abstractly speaking, you have a set of requests, a set of offers, and you want to match them together so that as many requests are satisfied in such a way that an individual request is not satisfied by its one offer. So you take that problem, so you have a set of requests, you have a set of offers, and then you create a special type of flow graph, okay? So the special flow graph has got one source node, one termination node, and then you have this N intervening nodes in two stages. So the first stage of N nodes, now these arcs which are going for this flow, you give them the size of each request, okay? And similarly for these, the second stage nodes, you make the size of these arcs the size of each offer from each of these nodes. Now you kind of interconnect up these request nodes and offer nodes in such a way that you have that there is no direct line between each request and each offer, but each request gets connected up to every other offered node. Okay, and I'll come back to this the size of this in a minute. So effectively, what you can see, okay, for now let's just assume that this U is infinity. Okay. Now what this gives you is that if there is some max flow in this particular graph, okay, the max flow will have the property that it will try to satisfy as many of these requests as possible. And you still have the constraints that when you satisfy the maximum number of requests, you're still going through the constraints that you're not exceeding the amount of offer of any given user. And you're also satisfying the constraint that a request is not using its one offer. So this was actually a pretty interesting result. And the other really pleasing aspect of this, and that's actually a pretty interesting aspect of this max flow problem, is the fact that when you start off with integral values for each node in a max flow graph, then the final max flow is actually an integral value. So everything, so your solution set will turn out to be integral in all these values. Okay, and so then you can actually, max flow actually gives you two other benefits. One is that you can actually, this is not just a regular max flow. There's so many versions, okay? There's something called cost-based max flow, in which you can kind of assign costs to each of these arcs, so that you can say that, for example, if from this particular node, if it's going to offer resources to this particular node, it'll have a cost associated with it. So you can create a cost-based graph, and you can still solve it. And the other thing you can do is an incremental version, because once you do this request and offer matching, and you create an assignment, and then later what's going to happen is that people are going to go in, go out, and so on. So you need to keep making changes. So max flow is also amenable for incremental changes. So these were the kind of nice properties. And so that, so this was a little breakthrough that we were really waiting for. And so we use this as a basis for being able to take this for creating a kind of sharing arrangement of unused edge resources. But this is at this algorithmic level. So, but at the practical level, you also need a way of sharing resources, right? So we came up with this concept, which we call the personal cloud. And so in this personal cloud, the idea here is that you have your unused edge resources. So here I'm showing you a particular home network in which you have your kind of modem, your cable modem or your fiber or whatever, a modem that's going by a home router into your home network. And in your home network, you have your computers that you use. And then you have these other dedicated computers that you're willing to share with others. So in this particular, so this model of personal cloud, the way this works is that you kind of go through these multiple stages in which you as an end user can mark out your unused computers. You run this personal cloud software on these unused computers, which effectively is hypervisor plus a management agent. And then so you create your personal clouds. And again, the goal of this personal cloud is not for using these VMs for your usage, but it's more for sharing with others. So you create this personal cloud framework, then you run this matchmaking algorithm, which kind of shares, so that you make your requests and offers. And so through the matchmaking, you can see that you as an end user are offering these kind of these few VMs, and you have access to other VMs. And now when you have access to VMs which reside elsewhere, now we have dedicated access to those VMs. And so that really is the crux of this approach. Now, one question that, which is a natural question to ask is, okay, I understand that you're running some hypervisors and running some VMs on top of them, but is there something special that you've got to do at the edge? I mean, because at this point, everyone understands, okay, what a hypervisor is, what a cloud is, what a cloud management system is. Is there something you've got to do special at the edge that you don't have to do elsewhere? Okay. Now, obviously, security is one issue, and security has got two aspects to it, actually. One is there's a hosting user, and then there's a VM coming in from somewhere else. Okay, so you've got to isolate each from the other. That is, when you're running VM on someone else's, say, house, you want to make sure that that person isn't doing anything malicious to the VM, that he's not tampering with it. And similarly, when you're running someone else's VM in, say, your home network, you really want to make sure that that is not doing anything to your home network. So the security aspect is, of course, strong. And then there's whole resiliency aspect to it, because when you run at home, this is not really a data center. So things are going to go up and down. And then this, one could again say that these aspects are exist in regular data centers also. But really, but some of the key differentiators of an edge cloud as opposed to data center cloud comes down to NAT traversal, bandwidth management, and some special edge hypervisor requirements. Okay. So this NAT traversal really means that your VMs, which are running in your home network and which form your personal cloud and which are going to be accessed by others, now they need to access it when it's sitting behind your home NAT. They can't because there's no direct connection. So you need to figure out a way to manage that. And similarly, the bandwidth management. Again, as was mentioned in the previous talk, you're going to have a lot of issues in which you run, if you let other people run VMs at home, and they kind of burst bandwidth uncontrollably, okay? Because your edge bandwidth is a finite resource. You need to kind of carefully manage that. So this bandwidth management is crucial. And again, edge hypervisor. So now we're not talking about running some kind of data center class 8-core Xeon server, okay, in the home. We're talking of people having that, okay, here's a laptop, I'm no longer using it, let me make use of it for that. So we're talking about some generic low power hardware, which typically doesn't have hardware virtualization support. Then if you, and especially if you look at something like a laptop will have a tiny disk, okay. But people do have lots and lots of USB storage. I mean, I was going through my USB storage at home, and I think at this point, I have almost 6 terabytes of storage. But this 6 terabytes is in form of like maybe half a dozen USB drives, okay. So if you look at something like, for example, VMware's ESXi, okay, the new one's actually pretty good because it supports USB storage. But till now, there was no notion of plugging in a USB storage. So if you use VMware's ESXi hypervisor, you couldn't, for example, use this. And the other thing about this end user equipment is that you don't really have a bunch of adapters. You've got one single adapter. Okay, and again, so some hypervisors, like for example VMware, used to have the notion of a separate management adapter and a separate user space adapter, which is fine for regular rack-mounted servers, but it didn't really work well for home computers. And again, but for creating isolation, there's really no VLANs available at the edge user. So you need to kind of deal with that. So these were the issues that we dealt with. And I guess if you have time, we could go through it later. But so I'm just saying that these are the kind of design issues that anyone who's ever building any edge-based cloud needs to be aware of. Okay. And for example, this even this bandwidth management. So if there are actually 3 levels of bandwidth management. One is that if 2 VMs are there inside one single computer and they want to talk to each other, now there's no problem, okay, because that's going all inside that computer. But 2 VMs, they want to talk to each other and inside the home network. Now you need to make sure that within the home network also, they don't really that you set up a bandwidth limit, okay, so that inside the home, they're not chewing up the home bandwidth. Finally, a VM, which is talking outside the home network. Now, for that, you need to set up another type of bandwidth limit, because when you're going outside your home network, then your bandwidth constraints are a lot more stronger. So there are all these design issues that we need to look at. Okay, so anyway, we did create this prototype, and that was the focus of this submission to this workshop. And moving forward, we are taking those ideas, which we use in the personal cloud, and we're trying to see if we can retrofit them into some existing cloud software, like, for example, CloudStack and OpenStack, so that rather than using our own homegrown management system, we can integrate our work with existing cloud management software. And the other thing is that this, so far that in the personal cloud, the idea here was sharing resources. That is, you as an end user are not only providing these resources for use, but you're also consuming them, okay? So now we're kind of moving to the new concept in this virtual distributed edge cloud, in which you as an end user simply provide these resources, and then an operator, a virtual data center operator, takes all these end user resources, aggregates them, creates a virtual data center out of them. So the goal here is that, okay, you create this virtual data center, you kind of use regular cloud management software like OpenStack or CloudStack, and then try to see how regular cloud software like Hadoop and so on is going to work on it. And of course, we did see, and this is some work that we just started, but we are seeing that there are, again, a huge bunch of issues involved here, which deal with this NAT traversal. Now it's a little bit even more complicated, because in this model, the notion is that you have your edge clouds, I mean, your edge compute nodes sitting here in the home, while your cloud manager is sitting here in the central place. So now your management plane traffic also has to do with NAT traversal, which is proving to be problematic. And so then one aspect of design space is whether you want to create an over-the-top virtual data center, or you want to go through with help from the service provider, okay? Because when you go with service provider involvement, it's so much easier. You can create virtual address spaces and so on. And but this tunneling is proving to be a bit of an issue, because they're looking at all these virtual networking proposals which are there in IETF and elsewhere, and all of them rely on IP encapsulations. IP encapsulation is really bad for NATs. For NATs, you need to have some TCP or UDP-based encapsulation. And again, there's always the big elephant in the room, which is how does one secure the VMs from the hosting node? Because when you want to create a commercial service, you want to create a trust in the user that things are going to work. So these are all the open issues. And again, this is work that we just started, so we're looking for any kind of solutions on this. Okay, so thanks.